Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
Gravity Commons Podcast coming at you today with Christy and Ben. I'm Matt. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Christy. You were saying Paul's out of town. He's in the Dominican.
He sure is. Yeah. He's, honestly, this is the first time I think in our entire marriage where I've asked him not to travel somewhere, which is kind of weird. Now I'm just telling the whole world, but
yeah.
Wow. He was going to have to cross the border and go to Haiti. And there's a lot of things happening over in Haiti.
Is there?
That are not awesome. And right. So he's just going to the DR. He's not going to Haiti. But he's gone.
I see.
So we're all missing him. And
So he was going to go to Haiti. So the request was, please don't go to Haiti while you're down there.
Correct.
I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
All right.
There's
he's used to traveling. Paul's a traveler. Yep.
He is a traveler for his job. And for the most part, I mean, we figured it out. You know, we text each other, call each other. Mm-hmm. I become, solo mom for a while and then he comes back and there's a great reunion. So it's awesome.
Ben and I used to travel way more than we do now. And there was always something nice about reunions when you're with your family, you know?
My kids like run to the door when he comes. It's like the cutest thing. Even like my old kids. Like it's just really cute.
That is really sweet.
Is that because he hands them 50s? Comes home.
Here's your payment for running to the door.
Thank you for
speaking of payment.
Boosting my ego.
Speaking of payment, Ben, didn't you just buy your daughter a car?
Well, no. I mean, I facilitated the purchase and I contributed towards the purchase.
What was your broker fee?
No, we contributed towards the purchase. And my broker fee was basically, don't crash this car. I made her promise that she wouldn't crash the car.
Oh, gosh.
No.
Well, this is a big day for you, man. You've been chauffeuring your college-age daughter around for...
Yeah. She's in college, but she's only 10 minutes, 15 minutes away from us. But she has not had a car. She's lived in the dorms there. And hasn't had a car for a minute. And it is a big deal. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's excited. And, she's very excited.
Listeners, since our last podcast, my son started a new job.
Oh, what's he doing?
He works at a they do have coffee there, but it's mostly a gourmet donut and ice cream shop.
Okay.
It's called Ohana Lulu. And, it's right down, it's like a mile away. You can get to it through like walking through our neighborhood and then across a park.
Yeah.
And
will he walk or ride his bike or something, or will you take him?
You know what? This is, can I put on my old pants for a second? I am baffled. When I was a kid, I rode my bike all over town.
Yes.
And without a helmet.
Yep.
Into oncoming traffic. I mean, I was riding my bike.
Got hit by several cars most days.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, was the 80s.
I can't. It was a different time. I can't get my kids to ride their bikes anywhere.
So is he going to walk?
Christy.
Matt, listen.
Christy's
pushing you towards something here.
His mother
is so nice.
Is driving him and picking him up.
Wow, that's really thoughtful of her.
That's one word for it. I'm kind of like, hey, walk. It's a it's probably a 20-minute walk.
It's not too bad.
And you go over a bridge that has a sidewalk, and that's the only time you're ever outside of a neighborhood. But, you know, for better or for worse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as Christ loves the church, Christy. Mm-hmm.
Come on. I love it.
So she drives Deacon to Honolulu. We went on a little date last night, my wife and I, because we're lovers. And she was like, hey, we should go surprise Deacon at his job, which he's had like, this is like his second shift. Okay. So we go in there and we get a little bit of like, he's like walking and he says, welcome to Ohana. And he says, he's saying that he sees us and he kind of does a stop and he kind of like does that, you know, like puts his body back. I think he was glad that we were there. But as we're there, these three people come in and this guy is like, I'm not kidding, 20 minutes of this. Don't you guys have coconut ice cream? Isn't coconut like, isn't Ohana like Hawaii? Why wouldn't you have coconut ice cream?
Oh no.
Do you have chocolate? Just plain chocolate? Why don't you have plain chocolate ice cream? Well, I got to figure out what I want. I'm not seeing very many things here that I want. Yeah. Well, tell me about your donuts. They're gourmet donuts. You can make them however you want. Do you have just like a plain yeast donut? Like for 20 minutes, you guys.
Wow.
And I was watching my son. He basically, it sounded like these two other people drug him in, you know, like was like, let's go to Ohana. And he did not want to be there. And he was finding everything he could wrong with everything. But I was really, really proud of my son. Like, I almost jumped in, by the way. Like, I was almost like, this guy is so inappropriate. He's being so rude to a 15-year-old and a 16-year-old coworker, you know, and this guy was probably 50. But I was so proud of my son because he was like, wasn't trying to make things better for this guy. Wasn't apologizing for not having coconut ice cream. Mm-hmm. Who the heck has coconut ice cream, by the way? He just was like, all right, well, let me know when you decided. I'll be happy to make whatever you need. Mm-hmm. So I just like affirmed him after work. He got home around 9. I was like, man, you did a great job of not absorbing this guy's shenanigans.
Yeah.
And just letting him like ruin his own life.
Yeah.
And you didn't let it ruin yours.
Keeping the anxiety where it belongs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
That is good. Good boundaries. Nice job, Deacon.
Yeah I know. There you go.
You got a little fella. And then he always brings us home donuts and I don't need 9 p.m. donuts. I don't need.
I do.
Yeah. I don't need 9 a.m. donuts.
Do they have gluten-free donuts? I'm going to order some. I'm having a graduation party, y'all. Because I'm graduate, you know, I'm actually walking across the stage since I defended. Oh, nice. But my graduation party is, I don't need any more degrees, and we're having donuts and coffee.
That is the most Christy thing ever.
Totally, it's gonna be so great.
The only thing that would make this more Christy is if there was some kind of neighborhood 5K looped into the whole party.
Right. Yeah.
We have to run 5K first.
You can have your donut
in a costume
after you run your 5K.
Everybody, it's a cap and gown 5K.
Right. And then you can have a donut. Oh,
Matt, don't give me that idea. I might just do it.
I know you might. I know you might. Oh my gosh, that'd be so amazing. All right. Well, we should probably into this little combo we had with Susanna Griffith.
Yeah.
This was a really special conversation.
Sorry, Matt. Yeah. We were just talking about you were going to tease the learning community we have coming up.
Nah.
But now we have
to. It's April 24. I'll tease it. It's April 24. Tell me about it, Ben.
yes. All right. So we've started this learning community online. That's part of our paid Gravity Com community subscription. But you can also just pay what you want and come to each session. So we're doing it every month on the fourth Wednesday of the month, which is coming up, April 24th at, when does it start actually, Matt? Is it 8 p.m. Eastern?
Yeah, 8 p.m. Eastern.
That's what it we goes decided. To 8
to 9, 8 p.m.
8 to 9:15 p.m. Eastern time. There's a link in the show notes, but you can go to gravitycommons.com/reconstructing. It's the learning community is all about what does it look like to reconstruct a more livable faith after you know, all the deconstruction that a lot of us have gone through. And so our first little mini series here is about the gospel. And so last month, in March, we talked about like, what is a gospel? What does that word actually mean? And how did the early church use it and appropriate it for their own purposes? And kind of, that was a super interesting discussion. And then this week, or this month, we're talking about what was the gospel that Jesus preached? Because it obviously wasn't an atonement theory. It was, you know, it was something different than that. So we're talking about that next week, Wednesday, April 24th. So anything else you want to say about it, Matt?
Nah. No, this is probably going to be two classes because there's so much to cover here. But just listener, like the gospel that most people were taught to share and the gospel most people heard, like Jesus never proclaimed it.
Yeah.
And so what's going on that we've got a gospel that doesn't come from the good news himself, Mr. Good News himself, in the gospels? And so we're going to talk about 2 weeks probably of the gospel Jesus preached, and then we'll finish it with the gospel that Paul preached, because there's a lot of juice. People have a lot of juice for that. They preached a different gospel, and we're going to talk about mission and contextualization and all that. And then we're going to wrap it up with, so then how do we proclaim the gospel? What is the gospel? What are we saying yes to when we say yes to the good news? So yeah, join us. The first one was a blast. And if you if you become a premium member, you get the first one too.
Yeah, you get access to a part of our community where you can get access to all the previous conversations. Yep.
Yes.
gravitycommons.com/reconstructing if you want to explore how to join us.
All right. Okay, now we can get into
this. Now let's get in.
Now we can.
To this interview. I was not on this.
She was like really vulnerable, really open. Yeah. Sharing her story and being honest about the reality, but really coupled with kindness.
Yeah.
Really coupled with you can tell she's done serious work.
Yeah.
Where I did not sense like bitterness. Like she was not dripping with bitterness or like defensiveness or which honestly was this beautiful demonstration of love in a very strange way.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's how you felt, Matt, but that's how I walked away.
Oh yeah. So. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I totally felt that way. and I think that there's some interviews where we just talk about the content. And I feel like there's other interviews where it feels like we record a conversation, just a meaningful conversation between people getting to know each other. And there's a different tone to it and a different emotional sort of aesthetic to it. And I feel like Susanna really opened her heart to us. So I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited for y'all to be able to hear it.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, let's dive in.
Let's get into it.
Susanna Griffith joins us today on the Gravity podcast. She works with those experiencing homelessness at the only low barrier shelter in the Northern Indiana, Southern Michigan area, which is called Michiana, for those of you who maybe aren't familiar. She also has recently started doing some chaplaincy in the St. Joseph healthcare system up there as well. She's the author of a previous book, Leaving Silence, Sexualized Violence, the Bible, and Standing with Survivors, which was a Christianity Today Book Award finalist. Her scholarship focuses on the intersection of biblical studies and trauma. And today we're chatting about her latest book, Forgiveness After Trauma, A Path to Find Healing and Empowerment. Susanna, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Yeah. So the intersection of biblical studies and trauma is... it feels like a hot topic right now in the sense that I talk to pastors or Christians all the time who've been in countless Bible studies, maybe even have higher ed degrees in Bible, things like that. Maybe like Christy has taught Bible for years, but now we're all getting like a crash course preschool lesson in trauma. So
How did you get interested in this intersection? How did this become something that you wanted to research and write about?
Well, that's a great question. I think when I reflect back on my story, I came to seminary as a young adult right out of college, not really knowing a whole lot about the Bible, which sounds kind of funny for a seminary student, but in kind of the strain of progressive Christianity where I was raised, I would say like the teachings of Jesus were a big deal, but we weren't really interested in the whole Bible, especially kind of the gory, violent, traumatic bits. And I didn't necessarily think that the Bible had a lot to speak into the trauma that I'd experienced or the trauma that a lot of other people had experienced, precisely because I knew that the Bible had a lot of scary stuff in it.
Yeah.
And so as a first year seminary student in my intro to Old Testament class, I was really taken aback by how the reflections of profound suffering in the scriptures spoke into my suffering, communal suffering that I was aware of. And I felt like revealed God's deep solidarity with the world. And I was really hooked at that point. I decided to go ahead and get a PhD in biblical studies, because why not? all that Greek and Hebrew and Akkadian and Aramaic, all that good stuff, to understand more about how God could speak into the suffering of the world. And a huge part of that suffering is trauma. And a lot of it came from my own experiences of childhood trauma and sexual assault and later domestic violence, which is what my newest book is about. But yeah, I just found in the Bible a really deep well of wisdom for how we could connect our personal and communal traumas with really the heart of God. And I haven't been able to get out of that fascination since.
I love the tenderness I hear as you talk about that and the goodness that I hear and how that was what was drawing you is really beautiful. Your dedication page to this book it says this: it's for all people who live in bondage of abuse and who have been told to forgive and stay. May you know that life is your birthright in the name of God. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about this dynamic, like how the responsibility to forgive has really been used in an unchristian way?
Yeah, absolutely. And that word, as you were reading my own words back to me, which is a really surreal experience, that word bondage really stood out to me. When thinking about the 5 years that I was in a relationship of domestic violence, and there were a lot of other parts to that relationship as well, that were good and positive, but there was domestic violence in that relationship, and how it took me 5 years to be able to navigate away for myself out of that relationship because of the feeling of really being enslaved to the fear that I would die, that my, at that time, husband would die, that my kids would get taken away, and all of those fears trapped me. But above and beyond all of that, in many ways, what I was hearing from Christians trapped me as well. Because I was hearing from Christians that my desire to leave the relationship that I had expressed for years and years and years was a reflection of my failure to forgive. And as someone who was deeply, deeply religious, that made it, albeit impossible, for me to emotionally navigate a way out of that relationship. And believing deeply that forgiveness is part of the Christian story and that Jesus is good and Jesus wants life for us, I had to find a different way to think about this concept of forgiveness, one that reflected God's deepest desires for us to have life and not to be trapped in bondage in the ways that I was. And I really want to offer this book as a gift to those who are trying to navigate their own feelings of bondage, the ways that their community may be binding them. And if I can offer that, if I can offer vulnerably my journey as a gift to one other person so that they don't spend 5 years doing what I did, this book will be 100% worth it to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, the principles in this book are really helpful. And I want to kind of ask, because I think we're going to have listeners who are hearing this and they're like, okay, well, how do I know if I had trauma? Mm-hmm. Like, do we use these principles just to forgive? And like, how is that different than the mm-hmm. trauma experiences? And how do I know the difference? Can you just double click on that? Like, what's the difference between forgiving when yeah. someone sins against us and then forgiving after trauma?
Yeah. Well, I think what comes to mind first is that there's often a really a very profound power dynamic involved in abusive relationships that yeah. makes using this word forgiveness so much more tricky.
Yes.
I think that abuse is primarily about power and control. And when you're in an abusive situation, you are being controlled in ways that can be very totalizing. And that's different from, let's say, I asked my husband to start the crock pot to make the chili in the morning and he forgot, like, and then get home at 6 p.m. There's no dinner. Like, that's very irritating.
Right.
Not that that's ever happened or anything. But like, that's not traumatic. There's not a power dynamic in there. And in my experiences of abuse throughout my life in different situations and contexts, there's always been a power dynamic such that I was not free to do and choose what was most authentic to me. And forgiveness in that context is really tricky to talk about because it's kind of the opposite of how Jesus often talks about forgiveness in the Gospels. When Jesus is giving these lessons about how we should think about forgiveness, normally it's somebody powerful forgiving somebody who's less powerful, like yeah. a king forgiving the debt of his slave. That's super different from the yes. situation of someone who has been controlled being asked to forgive someone who's doing the controlling. Mm. And I think we need to recognize that distance in some ways, that we can't just copy and paste biblical teachings onto abusive situations without thinking about that dynamic that's in place there.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, our 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn how to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life that God shares with us. It is a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying out some new practices. In the Gravity Formation Course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence, and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us toward holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people from all over the world in this formation framework, and it's helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives and learn to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
Let's get back to the show.
I want to give just a trigger warning here because I'm going to use a violent illustration. But okay. The way that I try to explain it in shorthand, I think what you're saying, Susanna, is like if my 3-year-old son hits me in the face,
mm-hmm.
the forgiveness I extend to that kid is different than if I hit my 3-year-old son in the face.
Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely.
And I think, and that's like a really stark power differential example. And we can work from really clear example to less clear examples because we understand the really clear better than we understand the messier, you know? But I think you're right on to name that we have to see power and how it works in order to be able to name and notice trauma and then differentiate between forgiveness for a crock pot or forgiveness for like a parent hurting a kid.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll put you on the spot here because in the introduction you talk about how the scriptures you lay out like 5 really helpful like guiding principles for forgiveness. And I think that's really because instead of defining forgiveness, I think could you just walk us through those 5 principles? Because there's a lot of magical thinking about thinking about forgiveness and how it works. And I think you can maybe help us with that.
Yeah, well, I think that for starters, just recognizing that biblical forgiveness is not necessarily just one thing, but it often has something to do with release. And I think that's actually the 5th principle in my book, so I might just circle back to that in a second. But I think oftentimes people think that biblical forgiveness is antithetical to having any kind of negative emotions at all, especially anger. And I'm a Southern girl. You probably heard me say y'all already. And I'm very socialized to be nice and polite and accepting. And sometimes that and I'm a female. And I think for many of us women, we're very socialized to not be mad or difficult or anything like that. But I think that sort of biblical forgiveness is modeled in part on allowing ourselves to be authentic about what we're feeling. And anger is part of that. And kind of moving a step along from anger, a lament, being able to name what our losses are before God and our community and being really authentic that this was not right. This messed me up. I am not okay. And what are you going to do about it, God? I think differentiating between forgiveness and reconciliation is really super important. There are different biblical words for these things. And I think we can confuse forgiveness with this idea that relationships should just go on like before. And I don't even think that's what people call reconciliation, but I don't even really think that's what real reconciliation is, because reconciliation is what God does to bring into oneness all things, eschatologically, to use kind of a fancy biblical theological word. And what I see as more the end goal of forgiveness is release of ourselves from some of the pain that we've been carrying, release of the people who have harmed us from our own feelings we might have of wanting to be vindictive, and sort of this invitation to walk into new life. And I think that's really what gets at the heart of biblical forgiveness for me. I think I skipped over accountability, I think can be part of forgiveness. Oftentimes we think about forgiveness as being really unilateral, like somebody hits me in the face and I can just go on loving them, pretending that nothing has happened. But I think that actually in the biblical model, asking people to be accountable for their actions can be part of forgiveness. And if we have any expectation that there's going to be some kind of relationship after the forgiveness, I think that accountability has to be part of that. So those are some of the ways that in this book, I wanted to kind of add ingredients into the pot of what we might sort of stereotypically think of forgiveness as being, to help us get at sort of the more robust and well-rounded intention for forgiveness that I think God has for us.
Yes.
I'm wondering, like, you talk about lamenting or being able to express your anger, yeah, and be like, hey, God, like, do something about this.
Yeah.
What practical tips do you have for our listeners of how to actually do that?
Yeah, I think that it's really hard in a society that can normalize just holding it all in, just being okay, getting over it. I think that for me, what was part of what was tremendously healing was listeners who made that space and very explicitly invited me to do that. Because I think that really lament isn't just sort of screaming out into the nothingness. It's screaming out before God. Yeah. And I think that sometimes having other people there who represent God's presence, whether that's counselors or pastors, therapists, very supportive friends, they can represent the presence of God, mm-hmm, in ways that can make it feel safe to do that. I know that I'm a person who really thrives in those kinds of intimate conversations, and I talk about that in my book quite a bit. But just knowing that we're not alone when we feel these, even when we feel the despair of nothing feeling right in the world, and even when we feel the despair that God might not be just or kind, having people be present there to represent that God is still there, even in those moments when we feel that way, to me has been really powerful.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, Christy, I'm hearing this theme that we've heard before, but I'm hearing it over and over from Susanna about like the forgiveness and dealing with trauma. You have to be willing to not bypass what you're experiencing, and also not, you know, in your story, Susanna, about feeling kind of stuck in a mm-hmm abusive marriage, mm-hmm, between this burden to forgive, but also this desire to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And you're feeling guilty for wanting to take care of yourself, mm-hmm, and you're feeling guilty for not being able to forgive. And yeah, it's a horrible sort of prison where you're just gaslighting yourself over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, Chrissy, are you noticing this too? Like this willingness, I forget the word you use, Susanna, like to be like authentic or mm-hmm to tell the truth mm-hmm about reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's, what's interesting is that if you've been in a traumatic period of time, season, experience, mm-hmm, and you work through this and you're able to differentiate and understand like, okay, here is where like forgiveness is and here's where I'm taking care of myself and kind of untangle that, it is wild to me how even years later, something can come up, something mm-hmm can be said, and then it all feels tangled again. Maybe I'm only speaking for myself, but like, I'm wondering, like, have you experienced that? And how do you, like, is it just, I know you're not starting back at ground zero, but it does kind of feel like you're like, doggone it, I've already done this. Like, why am I doing this again? Can you just double click on that for a second?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think oftentimes we expect healing to be a linear process, and it's so not a linear process. Like, I was literally driving from work back home to record this podcast with you guys. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I trust that my story is right anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can believe that what I think happened actually happened. And I'm going to go on this podcast and I'm going to talk to these people. And what if I'm wrong about what happened? Like, what if my interpretation of these events, what if what I did was totally wrong?
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, I feel that very heavily right now. And what I do in those moments is sometimes I check in with a friend and I'm like, hey, friend, do you remember what happened about 5 years ago? Did that happen? And they're like, yes, Susanna, that happened. Do you want me to send you some text messages of what we were talking about when you were going through that? So just having an outside reality check sometimes can be really helpful. And just still allowing the feelings to be there, allowing some of that guilt still to be there, that, yeah, I did ultimately divorce someone that I really loved and still love. I did that. And that still feels hard some days. And it's okay for that to be hard. And it's okay at the same time to know that that was life-giving and that was what I had to do. Hmm. And I'm sort of processing this as we're talking about it, right? But yeah, that is also real. And I think sort of getting back to your point, Matt, and about sort of what can feel like a dichotomy between forgiveness and taking care of ourselves. Ultimately, I found that the only way into true forgiveness was by taking care of myself, was by doing what I needed to do, which in this situation was to end the marriage. Because there was no way to sort of release myself or release my husband at that time from the events that had happened without moving myself into a place of freedom.
Yeah.
And what I really came to believe, and part of why I wrote the book, was divorcing my husband was the most forgiving thing that I could possibly have done.
Hmm. You're going to need to say more about that, because I think for a lot of us, mm-hmm. Susanna, we feel like divorcing someone is the opposite of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. So there's this assumption made, if you forgive, you won't have to, quote, get a divorce, right? So yeah. will you unpack, if you're comfortable, unpack
absolutely
how that was the most forgiving thing that you were able to do?
Yeah, well, I think it gets back to that idea of the biblical idea, I think, of forgiveness as release. One of the most commonly used words in Greek for forgiveness is aphiemi, and it literally means letting go. While I was still in the marriage with my ex-husband, I was constantly reminded of the worst moments of his life, which were the moments when he hurt me. And he would also say that those were the worst moments of his life. And no matter what he did, whether that was counseling or moving out of the house for a while or apologizing or trying to take responsibility, it was never enough. Hmm. The trauma was so deeply etched into my body and my mind and my spirit that there was nothing that he could do that was enough for me to sort of move on in our marriage from that. Hmm. It was impossible to forgive him while we were still married together. And I loved him. And those feelings of pain and hurt and betrayal were never antithetical to love. I love him still. And I am proud to say that. But I could not be married to him. When I divorced him, I felt this very visceral release of all the trauma that I had been holding in my body for 5 years. And I remember after I signed the divorce papers, my good friend and pastor David had driven me to sign the papers because I was like terrified. Mm-hmm. And signed the papers, got back into the car with him. I just like broke down and sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And I wasn't so much sad as feeling like I'm letting it all go now. Mm-hmm. Like my life can begin again now. And I could feel in that moment while I was crying, how deeply my ex-husband was loved by God and how much I was loved by God and how we were going to be okay. And that these horrible events in our relationship that neither of us wanted were not the end for either of us. And that I was not defined by those worst moments in my life. And my ex-husband was not defined by doing those horrible things. Mm. It was forgiveness that I experienced through divorcing him.
Yeah, I think sometimes there's been a lot of work done. I'm sure you've done this work too, Susanna, about how the Old Testament talks about how marriages are broken, you know, and there's a lot of ways to break it down. But I've heard one like helpful way of sort of remembering it is like the three A's, like there's abuse, adultery, and abandonment. Right. And I, as I hear you talk, I wonder if it's not like that's sort of the, that's like the trump card you get to play. Like if I get abandoned, then I get to divorce. But what I, as I hear you talking about it, like there's something about abuse inside of a marriage that so transgresses and violates the covenant of what we've done that sometimes it's unrecoverable. Like sometimes what the work it does to this bond is, sometimes it's just, you're unable to sort of work it out. So I appreciated you sharing that.
And I think, I appreciate you providing that perspective. Because as I divorced him, I was blamed over and over by breaking my family, breaking my marriage. And for me, the marriage had been broken a long time ago. I remember the first time he put his hands on me in 2017. I remember saying to him, our marriage is over. And of course, I said that in a moment of a lot of fear and trauma and all of this. But it was also really like gutturally true that something changed in our marriage the first time he touched me in that way. Yeah. And I could not go back, no matter how hard I tried. And that feeling of failure was really debilitating for me. For
years. Yes.
And it really helped when my pastor, David, helped me to reframe this by saying, like, the covenant of marriage was not broken by you signing this paper. It was broken by your husband being abusive to you.
Yeah.
And now, a word from a sponsor.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
I really appreciate your vulnerability and transparency because I really believe that it helps people hear other people's stories. So I just want to say thank you for that. I'm curious if we could kind of take a turn and talk about Matthew 18. Because Matthew 18 talks about, you know, if your brother or sister sins against you, go to them. And if they don't listen, then you take a friend. And if they still don't listen, then you take them in front of the church. And if they don't listen, then you treat them like a pagan, you know? And so many churches use that. And so I just maybe walk us through the problem with this approach, like, and help us know, how do we know when to follow Matthew 18?
Yeah. Wow. This was my experience. My experience was when I came to a pastor and asked for help, the pastor would try to loop in my husband and get his perspective on the situation and then say things to me like, well, your husband tells a very different story about what happened. So why don't we just sit down and work it out? And by the way, do you know what you might be doing that might be causing your husband to hurt you in this way?
Stop it.
No, that has happened to me more times than I care to recount. Or people saying, like, this needs to be solved privately. Like, this is a matter between you and your husband. I think that what a lot of people forget about is that Matthew 18 is talking about the Adelphoi, the brothers, to use the gendered term of the language. That kind of presumes a sort of equality among everybody. It doesn't presume a situation where somebody else might be holding someone else in their power to the extent that someone's life might be in danger. I don't think that's the context of Matthew 18. And abuse very clearly has that power dynamic that we've talked about, where we're not Adelphoi here. Sorry, guys. But I really kind of wish that sort of the end part of Matthew 18 were followed a little more, that people would be held accountable, that people who do harm would be held accountable fully for their actions. Not to say that that abusers shouldn't have community too, but like, why don't we talk about the part of Matthew 18 where a community stands up and says, okay, no more? Because that has not happened in my experience. And I would say that especially in the churches that I was in at the time of my divorce, the pressure to reconcile with my spouse was so powerful that it almost made me turn away from church forever. And I would say, obviously the worst consequence of all that is that it puts people's lives in danger when we sort of uncritically apply these teachings to situations that they weren't meant to address.
Yes. I just want to speak to everybody listening right now. There are few things more unhelpful than responding to allegations of abuse when somebody brings them to you with questioning what have you done to perhaps warrant this abuse. It is just thoroughly unhelpful. And it itself is an insensitivity and a foolishness to the power dynamics at work. So Susanna, I'm sorry that was said to you. I think all of us maybe can reckon with that in this moment here, but we have to prepare our bodies for action for when people bring these kinds of stories of violence against their bodies to them, that we don't look for ways to make sense of it that makes the person hurting responsible for their hurt.
Yeah,
that's right.
I think that the most powerful words that anyone has ever said to me are, I believe you.
Yeah. And that's really all that needs to be said too, right?
Yeah.
Like in that moment, you don't have to say anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, as you're talking there, I was thinking about, you know, one of the things you named without naming it is you went back to that power differential. Like in Matthew 18, there's a power equality, right? And I was thinking about how Jesus doesn't follow Matthew 18. So in John chapter 8, right, there's a conflict between some men and a woman, and he doesn't make that woman go to each guy and work out her conflict with them, or make the men go to her and like, okay, work this out. But rather, because there is such a stark, dangerous power differential, Jesus intercedes on her behalf and helps her find safety, and he doesn't leave until she's safe.
Okay, that is amazing, and I'm stealing it. With credit, of course. That's really good, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, your comments provoke that. And I think if we need to be free to use wisdom as we read the scriptures, rather than reading scriptures as like this Harry Potter book of spells that we have to incant, you know, you know what I mean? We have to follow this recipe just right. And I think that's not what the scriptures are for. Sorry.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a good TED talk on the scriptures.
Well, you've already mentioned this once, but I want to, as we wind down here with the last few questions, Susanna, you talk about reconciliation towards the end.
Yeah.
And you've already mentioned this, but we often conflate or confuse forgiveness and reconciliation as though they are concomitant with each other or as though they always are together. So help us differentiate between the two? What's needed for reconciliation that's not needed for forgiveness?
I think that forgiveness is releasing someone else into the best of what God may have for them without any assumption of further relationship being needed. I think that reconciliation has a relational component that we're still trying to figure out what living parallel to each other in some way may look like.
Yeah.
But I don't think that reconciliation necessarily means that the relationship looks the same as it did before. So just to give a really obvious example, my ex-husband and I are now divorced. We have three beautiful children together, and I probably talk to him most days of the week. Talk to him before coming here. We have a great relationship. I would say that we are reconciled. Are we married? No. Are we ever going to be married or romantically intimate again? No. And people have this really annoying tendency to put reconciliation in a box that's way too small. Reconciliation is how ultimately God brings rightness between and among all things. And I think that reconciliation has to do with ourselves too. When I was in the marriage with my ex-husband, I was not reconciled with myself. I hated myself for staying in a relationship that I knew was abusive. Now I would say I have reconciliation in myself as well as reconciliation with my ex-spouse. And reconciliation can look so different and more beautiful than we expect it to. Mm. And here, my ex-husband and I are co-parenting our amazing and brilliant and beautiful daughters, and being friends and caring about each other and caring about each other's intimate relationships and wishing the best for each other. And boy, we are reconciled, but we are not married.
Yeah.
That is really helpful for me. I just, you know, a few years ago, I was in a situation that was traumatic. Mm-hmm. And in just this week, somebody said to me, well, you know, doesn't Jesus tell you to reconcile? And if you were really following Jesus, you would reconcile with that person. And my heart is tender.
Yeah.
There was like a lump in my throat of like, I love Jesus and I want to follow him with all my heart.
Yeah.
And forgiveness and reconciliation are not the same thing.
And I don't think we're always called to reconcile because that's ultimately God's work in the end. Yeah. And we're going to watch to see what God does with this mess, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think biblically we don't see humans primarily as the doers of reconciliation. We can be like co-laborers with God in that and agents of that, but God is the one who reconciles, and we're not. There are some people in my life, my ex-husband is an exception, who have abused me that I cannot reconcile with in that way. And that's okay too, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If I could put words on what I heard you say, Susanna, and you too, Christy, is that, Susanna, you mentioned we talk, we co-parent, we share a lot of things, but one of the things that will never happen is physical intimacy.
Yeah.
So reconciliation then requires some kind of trust and vulnerability.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think, I have someone in my life who regularly reaches out to me and says, hey, why can't we be closer than we are? Mm-hmm. And the last time this person did this, probably 5 years ago, I said, because when I was a young kid, your temper and anger traumatized me.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never reckoned with that.
Yeah. There has to be that accountability piece to build trust, you know?
So that's the accountability piece. And then I don't feel safe to be vulnerable in the way you want me to be with you until we deal with this thing.
Yeah, that's so real.
Right? And so, yeah, so I guess I think I've forgiven this person. I don't know how to account for, am I reconciled? I just don't know how to account for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think the more we talk about this, the more we share our stories, Christy, thank you for sharing that too. Mm-hmm. The more we can, I think, work towards righteousness and faithfulness, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, your last chapter really talks about release and rebirth, and there's so much good stuff there. I wonder, just maybe in way of closing and giving us some hope, can you describe like what healing from trauma looks like for us? What's one or two things? Give us one or two things that rebirth kind of entails.
For me, it's knowing that the trauma that happened wasn't the last thing or the most important thing in my life. There have been a lot of things since. That God even redeems memories. So that when I think about those years of my life, I don't just think about the awful things that happened. I also think about the birth of my first two daughters. And I think about my ex-husband's tenderness to them. I think about how we can be in healthier relationships as time passes. And as I finished writing the book, I had just sort of started my relationship with my now husband, Michael, who stepped into my life. And I'm always trying to be really careful as I tell this story, because Michael was not the knight in shining armor that healed my trauma and everything else. That would be so inaccurate. But I have Michael now, who has given me the opportunity to explore again what marriage looks like, what intimacy is like with someone who is not abusive, and what family can be like. And I never thought that I would be married again necessarily, or want to be married again, but then I met Michael. And that's a really beautiful part of my story. And was it Buechner who said that resurrection means that the worst thing isn't the last thing? And that's how I very much feel in my life, that God continually renews us and continually gives us what we need to take one step forward. And sometimes gives us new and second chances at things we never could have imagined. And that's what I want to hear people. That's what I want people to know that my story is really about. God making everything new.
Yeah. I think it's really important. I just want to maybe highlight two things by way of close here. It's really important that when you talk about Michael and your relationship, like, this wasn't a rebound rescue.
No, I rescued my own self. With the help of a lot of other people and God and all the things.
But yeah. Yeah. So this isn't about like, yeah, because I think that's a tendency for a lot of us to escape one bad situation into another and therefore sort of just like carry on. But you're actually talking about like, there's a relearning and a rebirth in the areas where harm was done.
Yeah.
And that's a very, that might feel like you're working out some kind of deliverance with fear and trembling, you know, as you do that. And the second thing I want to name is, you know, you said on your way here that you were calling friends and being like, tell me this story again, or is this the story? And I think people who haven't experienced trauma don't understand why we talk about it so much and how we have to remember and remind ourselves, yes, this really happened. And then when other people receive that story with care, gentleness, and courage, there's actually a repair in the telling and in the receiving of that story. And so it's not that just people are stuck, or that they're just complaining, or that they're just talking about, they're only focusing on the negative. But it actually, I think, sharing your story today, Susanna, writing this book, is a reparative, restorative gift. So thank you for doing that and showing up today.
Thank you so much.
The book again is Forgiveness After Trauma, A Path to Find Healing and Empowerment. Susanna, are you working on anything now? I know you like to research and do stuff. Are you working on something new?
Yeah, I am. I'm writing a new book about what I want to share with my daughters about sexuality. So,
oh my goodness.
Come on.
It's still very much at the beginning stages, but I told myself I wouldn't write something about trauma next. So I'm writing about sex instead because that's mostly a happy thing. So right now anyway. So.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
You know what I'm struck by is it's not just her writing in her books or her words, but her demeanor, I felt like, was dripping with forgiveness. The way that she spoke in a healthy way, not in like a happy clappy everything is perfect, but in an actual real, like, vulnerable, authentic way, she's living it out. She's like living proof in a picture of what it looks like.
Yes. That's one of the reasons I was so keen to interview her after reading through this book. I could tell that you don't write this book from a place of aspiration. It's not idealized, but there's something of her life in this book that was wrung out through tears and pleas and missteps and, you know, all of the stuff of life where we have to walk out what forgiveness means in our bodies and in our relationships. And to your point, Christy, I felt like the listener won't be able to see this, but I my guess is that as you listened to her talk, you knew that she was smiling.
Yes.
You knew she was smiling.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was, it was really cool. I think it's challenging for many of us who grew up with, in certain, like, Christian cultures where divorce is always wrong, to consider how divorce can actually be the best case scenario for a couple who've been traumatized. I think that's challenging for many of us to hear that. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. Or even like any traumatic event for there to be release for both people to be, in freedom, in greater freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we think that way. No. And so, I mean, her obviously situation is divorce, but to kind of have it pictured and framed that way, I think was actually really good for me.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Man.
My heart feels tender. I don't know if our listeners feel that way, but I guess maybe, listener, if you were replaying your own story and kind of like reading into like what was being said and trying to chew on that stuff, you're not alone. I think that Matt and I were doing the same thing and in our stories, and maybe the encouragement is like, go call a friend, you know, get on the phone and say, did this really happen? Ask the questions, get the, I don't know. Just have the encouragement that you need from the people around you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is one of the reasons why Ben and I have been doing this after party podcast on the Gravity Commons community for the premium members, where we talk about our sort of traumatic experiences in ministry and how we've continued to press forward into recovery and rebirth and the things she was talking about. And I notice that I need to learn and work on releasing. Mm-hmm. So, I am really good at resentment. I'm really good at resentment, but I'm not good on releasing. And I make jokes about it, sometimes because, that's how I cope with pain. But also I'm encouraged again and challenged again to do that work, to stay in it and do that work. So,
it's good. Right.
It is good. Well, before we go, Christy, what is red and won't fit in your pocket?
I don't know, Matt. What is red and won't fit in your pocket?
Mars.
Of all things.
Well,
okay, there you have it.
It's just a truthism. It's truth. It's truth. Make sure you tell your kids.
All right. Peace, friends.
And next time.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity Commons. It's free to join, and you can connect with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith, spirituality, and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sturkey and Matt Tebby. Aaron Sturkey edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsturkey.com. We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or a comment for us, go to gravitycommons.com/message and click Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.